Well, here we are back after all these sessions that we've been jumping into. I was now coming out of the mantra session with all the sound. And as you've seen before, we were trying to connect a little bit more. I'm going to invite you to do a little experiment and see what this sounds to you. And if we can keep on with that breathing, because through breathing, we can connect into different emotions, different states, and regulate a little bit our stress, our nerves, a little bit of anxiety. So I invite you to, if you're coming from the mantra session, to keep with that state. And if not, I will invite you to close your eyes. It's going to last 1 minute. And focus your attention on your breathing. How are you breathing without wanting to change anything? How is your posture? How is your posture? How is your breathing? What are you doing there? And feel the breath going in, the air, and the breath going out. And I invite you to listen to the sounds and see how music takes us to different places. If your attention goes somewhere else, we bring it back to our body, as if one little kid got lost, with kindness, and we bring the attention to the body. I invite you to close your beautiful eyes and breathe for 1 minute while we listen to this music and see where it takes you. I invite you to keep with the eyes closed, still yet, just breathing. And seeing there with the eyes closed, I invite you to make a wish, make an intention for yourself and the Salutogenesis conference. Keep it there, breathe it in. Feel yourself with that nice wish and nice feeling. Breathe in deep and let yourself go as we open slowly our eyes. And I will introduce in this different way to Pauline Bachibinga. And she's going to introduce the next point, that is the plenary dialogue and the ways forward, advancing the concept of sense of coherence. She will introduce the dialogue partners, Sylvia, Claude, Shauna, Michael, and Brent. So the floor is yours, Pauline. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Oliver. And hello, everyone, distinguished participants from across the world. My name is indeed Pauline Bachibinga. I'm a behavior scientist and public health physician. I work in Nairobi, Kenya, at the African Population and Health Research Center. I am also a member of both the Global Working Group on Salutogenesis and, for this conference, the Scientific Committee. Please allow me to convey to you all, our participants in this session, our heartfelt welcome. And with me to co-moderate this session are my very senior and experienced colleagues, Bent and Claudia, who individually and together share a strong passion for advancing the field of health promotion using Salutogenesis as the guide. And I'd like to invite Bent and Claudia to just say hello to our audience in your mother tongue.
Ja, hallo zusammen. Ich freue mich wahnsinnig, dass ich da bin und bin gespannt auf den Workshop. Merci vielmals.
Thank you, Claudia. Bent? Oh, he's not here. Okay. No, that's all right. So when he comes in, he will say hello. So we'd like to proceed. And I'd say that in this session, we reflect on the ways to advance the sense of coherence, the concept. And we're lucky to have a very diverse and a diverse panel of experts who going to share with us based on their experiences in their niche areas, but as well as from the beginning, from the earlier today, their experiences with what has transpired. Thereafter, when Bent comes in, we expect him to give some reflections on how far we've come in terms of our understanding and measurement of the sense of coherence and where we stand, and some of the reflections are connected to what we've shared as members of the Global Working Group on Salutogenesis. Thereafter, we'll have a discussion session that will be open. And during that discussion, I'll invite you, our audience, to use the board to ask questions or give comments, which time allowing will be addressed in the Q&A session, which will follow. Thereafter, we'll have closing remarks from Claudia. And so, yes, I'll go back to now. Allow me to introduce our panelists, who have graciously agreed to share with me information that is not known to the public domain, but they're happy to share with you today. And I'll start off with Shona. Shona, please turn on your mic and say hello in your mother tongue.
Hi, well, I'm Irish, so I guess I would say Jaydi Shakarja, and hi from my side.
Okay, and yes, so Shona, what the world doesn't know about her is that her love of reading and writing almost led her to study English or journalism when she was young. But it was her interest in stress and health that brought her to study psychology and ultimately work in clinical and health psychology research, where she still gets to put her love of reading and writing to use. And she would want to be remembered as you know, somebody who she wants to be remembered for her work on stress, health, and resilience with older adults. But if she gets the chance again in future, she would want to switch to do some work on dementia-related research. And then, but outside the research world, she hopes to be remembered for her love of Queen, that is the band, and her terrible drum playing. Thank you, Shona. So next is Sylvia. Sylvia, please say hello to our audience.
Moin.
Mother tongue, please.
Moin is a very, there's a local dialect here which is not known for using excessive words. So that is basically the standard word you can use for everybody all of the time.
Thank you, Sylvia. So, and Sylvia, joining us from Hamburg, right? Yes, in mm-hmm. Germany. So her love of reading, no, sorry, she has lived, okay, what the world doesn't know is that she has lived in 6 countries in 4 different continents, which is interesting, wow. But then she's just recently moved back to Northern Germany, where she's originally from. And what she would want to be remembered for is her passion. She would like to be remembered for making a contribution to improving working conditions and healthcare. So her passion in research is centered on applied solutions to current workplace problems and the changing world of work. Our next panelist is Claude Helen.
Hello.
And what language is that? Hello is universal.
That is German. And I'm also
okay. So could I ask you to use any of the dialects where you are best at the moment?
Or of the dialect at the moment. Yeah, I'm based in South Africa. There are 11 different languages here, so that is a bit difficult.
So whatever you prefer?
I could just say Habari Gani and use the East African accent because...
So that works. That works for the entire African continent anyway. So yes, she grew up in a male-dominated entrepreneurial mechanical engineering production company setting, and although her professional path led her into a very different direction, she can still get excited about technical engineering, and the smell of machinery makes her feel at home. And I think that that's what also led her interest into mental health with special regard to women in leadership. And what she would want to be remembered for is for bringing people of different backgrounds together and standing in for a peaceful and just world in which people and animals are respected, protected, and treated with kindness and care. Thank you, Claude Helen. And lastly, and definitely not the least, is Michael. Michael, say hello to our audience.
ערב טוב, אני שמח לראות אתכם.
Thank you. And so for Michael, well, this is what the world doesn't know about him, that most of his writing is done in coffee places. He loves coffee, and doing his writing in coffee places makes him feel that he's, what he's doing is not really work, but having, you know, great leisure time. And he would like to be remembered for, remembered as a pro-academic, that is a practitioner academic, and someone who identifies exciting questions of value to both conflict research and the work of people who attempt to promote, you know, society change. And that is it for introductions of our panelists. And now I would like to, we've come from a number of sessions, including the most immediately after the lunch break, but then a lot has transpired during the day. I would like to invite our panelists to share just one highlight from the day's events that they've attended and how well this relates to the sense of coherence, advancing the concept and their work. And I would like to, yes, since I still have Mike on my screen, could you go first? What's the highlight of your day?
Hi, it's me. What a surprise. Actually, this is very challenging. When we decided to bring in just one, I thought, oh, this will be easy. And it became difficult the more the day advanced. The thing that I stayed with was the conversation an hour ago or so between Avishai Antonovsky, Antonovsky the son, and Shifra Sagi, who was a student of Antonovsky. And what really got my attention is that in a way they described what a sense of coherence mean for our work, for us as people who are engaged in the work of developing sense of coherence. I think sense of coherence for us is, I'll make it very short, is to be very clear what it's about, and to be committed to identify exciting questions. It's to have values that guide us, not only in our professional work, academic work, but also in our personal life. And to be committed to bring what we discover to others as well and go beyond our own comfort zones. This is what I took with me.
Wow, thank you very much, Michael. I like the idea behind getting out of our comfort zones, you know, just look beyond that. That's amazing. That's an interesting learning. Thank you. And I'll now like to invite Sylvia to say something, one key highlight from your session.
Of course, this morning I participated in Marguerite's session on general and specific resistance resources, and that is something that I think is really going to stick with me and going to make me reconsider things as I move forward, is how much the presence of one determines the presence of the other. So while we may have specific resistance resources without having general ones in a specific environment, because we can just administer some sort of intervention, it probably requires a good environment and context to begin with that will then foster also the availability of specific measures that can allow us to create these specific resistance resources, and probably also vice versa. So this interplay is something that I will be thinking about afterwards as well.
Thank you very much, Sylvia. And I cannot add anything more to that. And now I'd like to invite Claude Helen.
Yeah, thanks very much. I saw several highlights today, and what I really enjoyed seeing was that a lot of people connected sense of coherence to the system and also to, you know, collective processes, really reflecting on the socio-cultural aspects of the sense of coherence. And that was not really new, but it got into a new dimension, in my opinion, and the depth of the discussion I really enjoyed.
We're certainly glad that you had a very nice day, and that would actually be an entry point for the discussion section. But for now, I'd like to invite Shona to briefly tell us about one highlight of her day.
Thank you. We just had our session there. We just came from it on the measurement of sense of coherence. And we had a lot of interest and input on sense of coherence in work, in different languages, in related to different health concepts. And one thing that I think that stuck out for me was this idea of wellness promotion and different health areas that focusing on this idea of a chronic wellness. This really stuck out as something not necessarily new, but this idea of really focusing on the positives and not only on the individual level and different health factors, but also it was mentioned in terms of like the environment or societal design level changes that could ultimately reach into broader areas. And I think this is quite nice because it's a lot of what we talk about is often on a very individual or group level. So I thought this was quite nice in relation to the measurement session that we just had.
You definitely had the low-hanging fruit. I mean, the fact that you came out of one that was actually focusing on measurement. So you've had it, well, good for you. And I'm glad we actually made you last. I didn't know. This was just at the spur of the moment. I decided to change the flow. But what you speak about connects to some of the concerns that we raise from our reflections as part of the Global Working Group on the work that has been done so far, vis-a-vis the entire salutogenesis, but now specifically on advancing the concept issues related to measurement and then understanding its different. Especially in early life, but then of course across the lifespan, but I mean, most specifically in early life, how that translates into the way we cope with stressors later in life. There's so many unanswered questions for now, and we need to give credit to Antonovsky for setting us in the right direction, but it's so much that needs to be done. At this point, Bent would be saying something, but unfortunately, I think he's having trouble with a connection. And so I would like to invite Claudia to step in and connect the dots for us to introduce the discussion. Thank you.
Yeah. Sorry, now you want me to introduce the discussion, not to tell about...
No. The connection is we'd want to talk about sense of coherence, but you've come out of a workshop that was focusing on the sense for coherence. So connecting the two, then we'll move into the discussion.
Good. Thank you. Sorry, I didn't understand before. Yes.
That's all right.
We had a workshop that was almost an adventure, because it's a very new concept we were talking about. Bengt mentioned it theoretically 10 years ago. And we have been investigating in 6 universities in 5 countries the past years about it. And it was the first time we could present it to an international audience. And I'm very happy that this concept is not completely wrong. The sense for coherence is the ability of professionals, not only, also of systems, of governments, to take the perspective, the inside perspective of their target groups or patients in order to strengthen their sense of coherence. So it's a concept on how to work with people so that their sense of coherence will be strengthened or can be strengthened. And we developed this sense for coherence quite a bit. And today it was really wonderful to have all these inspiring ideas of others and also to see this concept be shaping. It gets shapes and forms, and I was very happy about it. So maybe you want to know what it is. The sense for coherence is the ability to enhance the set comprehensibility, manageability, and meaningfulness in people or target systems by providing security, empowerment, and allowing mastery. And we have investigated how this works in practice. And this was the highlight for me, that we were welcomed with this idea, and that we were encouraged to go on with this idea. And we might build a small working group of people who are interested to pursue this concept. Thank you, Pauline.
Yes, thank you very much, Claudia. I'm pretty sure you have me as one of the people that would be joining that, because yes, I might be an early, no, I'm late at hearing about this. So today's my first time to really hear about it. But you might have a partner in future. But thanks a lot for sharing your insights, the work that you've done over the past few years with the world. Indeed, it's through these opportunities that you get to build a community of practice on some of these things and how to advance the health and well-being of societies. I'm sorry to be throwing you back into it again, Claudia. And could you please also open up the discussion?
Yes, I have a double role today because Ben is missing, unfortunately. And I will briefly open up the discussion on how all these highlights we mentioned now could connect together. We would like to discuss the idea, what is the linkage of advancing the concept of salutogenesis among all of us? What do we have in common and where do we differ? And so this is my question maybe to you. And I could maybe start with Shauna, because Antonovsky said, never use sense of coherence as a trait, never use it as a measure of personality. And you are not doing this, but you're getting closer to this kind of sense of coherence. And I would like to ask you, how do you conceptualize your SOC R, as you call it?
Hi, thank you very much for the question. So I work on the revised sense of coherence, or SOC, or as I call it. And basically this revised concept, it's let's say building on Antonovsky's version with some slight changes or modifications. And basically it's defined as like this ability to integrate positive and negative life experience in order to balance them and facilitate your health and well-being. So almost, not exactly a trait, but it's like, this kind of overall ability to deal with and manage life and stressful experiences, basically. It slightly differs from Antonovsky's in that it's maybe takes a more neutral position. So not so much on the predictability of events and how to deal with them if you can manage them, but more on dealing with the ambiguity of life experiences and balancing these positive and negative aspects into having overall general health and well-being. So that's maybe a little bit on the topic itself. What I do, I don't know if you want me to continue on or, so my research tends to focus more on sense of coherence in samples with past experience of early life adversity or trauma, such as childhood abuse or neglect. So we try to focus on samples with that. In stress and adversity research, this childhood trauma typically is seen as having long-lasting impacts into later life. And this field of research traditionally focuses on negative outcomes. So obviously I'm interested in resilience and sense of coherence and more the positive side of life. And obviously with sense of coherence and SOCR as well, it's proposed that these difficult life experiences, particularly early in life, can help shape one's sense of coherence. And that this obviously then in turn helps to mobilize your resources, help cope with stressors, and should facilitate then the movement towards health on the ease disease continuum. So from my side of research, even though I'm interested in stress research and adversity, I think that it's important to also consider this potential for positive outcomes or adaptability. And basically what I've seen so far, it's early days, let's say. But what I've seen so far is that it's important to look at sense of coherence in terms of the adversity experienced and consider, for example, it's been shown to mediate or explain the relationships between certain stress indicators or certain adversities and health outcomes. And I mainly focus on mental health and well-being. And also SOC or the revised sense of coherence, it's also been shown to moderate the relationship between certain early life adversities and mental health. What we've seen so far is that it indicates the importance of having a strong sense of coherence or strong SOC or, and that it, if you can build up the strong sense of coherence, it can potentially buffer the negative impact of stress or this relationship between adversity and health. Like I said, it's still early days, but yeah, I would basically probably emphasize the importance of understanding the relationships between these difficult life experiences early in life and the shaping of sense of coherence or SOC or, because in relation to early life adversity, which is more often understood within a psychopathological framework, the interplay of resources in your environment, within yourself, and how you can like put your sense of coherence to use almost. This points towards the potential for adaptation or change or positive outcomes. So I think, yeah, in terms of my stress research, I think, you know, sense of coherence or our revised SOC or really emphasizes this ability to take on stress and adversity and come out the other side, let's say fighting fit, or yeah, still be able to deal with things and manage your well-being overall. I'm going to ramble. I'm Irish. I will ramble. Please stop me.
Yes. And thank you very much, Shona, for this very detailed presentation of your thoughts. Meanwhile, happily, Bengt has joined us, and I welcome Professor Bengt Lindstrom, the first professor of some genesis. And before he talks, I give over to Pauline.
Yes, very happy to be here to actually connect with Bengt. Again, I was worried, and I don't want to jinx it at all. I think he needs to just talk to us. Welcome, Bengt.
Terve, terve. That is in Finnish. I have seen you, but I haven't been able to come in, and we have a good technical talk, and now I'm in. Thank you very much.
You are welcome, Bengt. Yes, so we've had the introductions, and our dear panelists have shared about the events of the day, their highlights, and that's across the four main panelists, and Claudia's also shared about the workshop on sense for coherence, which you are part of. And we had started off with a bit of the discussion, but we feel like I think it's only apt that you share your reflections so that we can actually dig deeper into the subject. Thank you.
Thank you. And the subject is advancing the sense of coherence in the salutogenic framework.
Yes.
And I have to start again to collect my thoughts. I remember one statement from Aaron Antonovsky. I was in contact with him for the last 7 years of his life. And he said, do not change the sense of coherence framework unless you have evidence that it actually works and it functions. And I think this was sometimes in the early 90s. And I think what I've heard today, what I have had possibility to hear, has been a question of how do we advance it. And I think this is really good. And we can actually look back and say, okay, do we have enough evidence? We have enough evidence, we have enough questions about what to do. And also, in the Global Working Group, we have made a statement on that we want to advance it now, new technology and so on, look at how we measure it and so on. So I think we are in a very positive situation. I also think back when IUHB was interested in building up a salutogenic global working group. We were only two persons working with this. The other one is Monica Eriksson. She's not here. She's not in the conference. I shall see if I can put her picture somehow. Yeah, that's her. And the two of us did actually start a systematic review of what has been written about salutogenesis and sense of coherence. And it came out with her thesis, Unraveling the mystery of salutogenesis, where we actually could go through all these areas and build up an idea. Unfortunately, Aaron Antonovsky left the scene, as you know, when he died. And this was in a very important paradigm state. He had been about working with this for about 17 years, and that's about the time it takes to bring in a new concept and to bring in a new framework. He was right there. He had started to contact WHO and their health promotion group, which was young and new at the time, and this was really prime time to break through. Unfortunately, when he died, people in Israel who were the closest collaborators and researchers were so shocked they didn't get on with it. I was supposed to meet him that year in the autumn of 1994. I went there, but I knew already at that time that he had passed away. He sent a message right before that I'm going to care. Please pray for me and see what happens. But I decided when I got back that I will start courses at the Nordic School on salutogenesis. So we started it in 1995, and these courses have run until the school was closed in 2011. And from there, we got the potential for people who knew this concept, we got the potential for scientists to come in also from the Nordic area. And pretty soon we also introduced this into another framework, which was the European Training Consortium, and developed the learning model that Claudia talked about, where sense of four coherence was used as a learning model. And then again, the Global Working Group has decided until now that they will not change the sense of coherence concept. But now we are at the stage when we are interchanged, and you have been in these workshops today. Unfortunately, my networks were closed down until an hour ago, and I couldn't really follow what has happened today, but you all have seen it. And I'm really thinking about, is sense of coherence discussed in terms of what does it do to there's one weakness I would find there, sense of coherence. And if you develop a strong sense of coherence, you can develop it for yourself and actually dominate other people. But in my opinion, you always have to think about what is the context. Is this about human rights? Are we working with the concept of everybody being actively participating subjects in this? And this is what you always have to link to sense of coherence. I don't hear it too much in discussion. We maybe did indirectly. Also, one other thing about sense of coherence, it was focused on health. I came into this area from research on quality of life. And for me, this was a natural word to transform into the salutogenic framework. But is it only about health? Is it not about anything broader? I mean, Antonovsky's measurement, the orientation of life questionnaire is talking about life. And life is a much broader perspective than health. And I'm always afraid that if we only use the health concept, we are going to stay in the hands of, let's say, my back profession is doctors who dominate that area. And I think we should also try to go broader. And I think that is also at the time being. Yes, I think this would be what I want to say at this moment. And I have to catch my breath a bit to go on. So I let the conference continue at the moment. Is that okay, Pauline? I can't hear you.
No, sorry, I had not unmuted. So I think, yes, you need to catch your breath. And because there are a few questions that have come in now, we thought that we could respond to those first before we move along. A nice introduction there from Bent. And so there are a few questions that I posted in, I posted for our panelists. And Claudia, please assist in relaying the questions.
Yes, please. The questions relate to Shona, who was talking before Bent. Fortunately came in, we're all happy you're here. First question is, I read it out, in your view, can one reframe pathological diagnosis as adaption that create manageability and comprehensibility, at least as temporary adaptions and following? What is the relation of the SOCR and post-traumatic growth? They related the two questions. That's why I put them together. And the floor again is yours, Shona, please.
Thank you very much, Claudia. And also thank you to those who posted the questions. For the first one about the pathological and adaptation, I wouldn't like to claim too much in terms of diagnoses, but in terms of pathological outcomes or pathological coping and adaptation, I would say, at least in my own opinion, that yeah, coping is not always necessarily positive. There's also, I don't like to label coping necessarily as positive coping or negative coping. And I think that for sure there could be short-term or temporary adaptation that can technically be seen as pathological or negative. I'm not sure I'd go so far as to say at the stage when you would get a diagnosis for something. But for example, taken from a whole different area of research, still working on early life adversity, but I did some qualitative research with survivors of institutional child abuse, and we had a few different people say things like, you know, when it was happening, they would kind of go to another place, they would kind of dissociate and block out and kind of withdraw. And this was very functional for them at the time to get through this awful experience, but then translated into later life into being quite withdrawn, having issues like with dissociation later in life and getting diagnosis for this. And at that point, it's no longer functional for them. So I think maybe it can be that some things are functional or adaptive on a temporary basis because they help you to manage the situation. But I'm not sure I'd go so far as to say that if it's a diagnosis or something that's prolonged or chronic, then it's still good for you or functional or adaptive. So yeah, probably there's different situations and different times when something can be put to good use, even if it would technically be seen as negative or pathological. And then the second question was sense coherence and post-traumatic growth, SOCR. I wouldn't claim myself to be a huge expert on post-traumatic growth, so please, anyone out there, do feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. But SOCR, or sense coherence revised, is more in terms of like this ability to manage the good and the bad in order to maintain your health and well-being. So we're not necessarily saying that something's going to happen and then you're going to go beyond what you used to be, or that you're going to experience this like growth after something bad has happened. It's more about maintaining what's okay for you and maintaining something that's functional and enables you to experience well-being at that time. So I would say it's slightly different in that, yeah, you're not expecting to grow from it or to experience, there's a word I'm missing. I don't want to keep saying grow, but yeah, you just want to maintain your well-being with positive and negative experiences. So integrating both of them and not necessarily taking something bad and turning into going beyond what you had before. I'm going to stop to try and stop the rambles.
Thank you very much, Juna, in telling us that coping is not always to the best, and coping is a process with different coping strategies regarding situations and life periods. And also thank you for this realistic view about post-traumatic growth. It's not that everything that makes you, that you survive makes you stronger. Thank you very much. So we are in a way back to the question we had this morning. Is it possible with so many negative experience to have, to thrive? Or is it just in brackets, a way to have the best quality of life achievable? And there we are back to health promotion. Thank you very much, Juna. If it's okay for you, since there is no, as I see, no new questions, I would like to move the discussion from the elderly and older people to whom I belong. I realized when I saw your average age and to the workplace. And I would like to ask Sylvia, what would you say? How does work-related sense of coherence workshop relate to general sense of coherence, the SOC?
Well, I will have to start out by just elaborating a little bit on the general sense of on the work-related, not the general one. That one should be very well familiar with the audience here, but on the work-related sense of coherence. So, because from the agenda, I saw that not too many people here are from the industrial organizational field at the conference at the moment. So, the work-related sense of coherence was conceptualized because there was such a close interplay between general sense of coherence and then also the work situation. And we've already highlighted today a lot how much the setting, the context matters for people's sense of coherence. And what has been found is that people with a strong sense of coherence are better protected from negative impacts in the workplace. So they have less stress, less burnout, they cope better with changes. And there have actually been direct effects, mediating effects, and moderating effects. But then also in the opposite direction, the working conditions can actually over time influence a person's general sense of coherence. A debate that we've had, right? It's not entirely stable. It's not a personality trait. It is something like a skill or an ability. And that also is affected by working situations. So how do they relate to each other now that we have a general sense of coherence and we also have this specific work-related sense of coherence? What we have found is that the working environment is more immediately impacting the work-related sense of coherence. So we can see the impact on the general sense of coherence later because it is also affected by experiences in other life domains. But it seems to translate over time. So, for example, having resources at work will enhance your work-related sense of coherence. We've actually shown this in longitudinal data and with a pretty good effect. So there's a pretty strong relationship there, which then seems to over time also have an impact on general sense of coherence. It was very small in our data. We only had 3 months intervals. And of course, over 3 months, it's kind of hard to detect changes in general sense of coherence. And then in the other direction, because that makes sense too, right? If you view your overall life as comprehensible, manageable, and meaningful, doesn't that mean that you would also be inclined to view your work situation in that regard? And that has also been true. So we have reciprocal relationships between the specific work-related sense of coherence and the general sense of coherence, and that even might initiate some upwards or downward spirals. So you have good sense of coherence, that means you have better work-related sense of coherence, which allows you to create more workplace resources, which then enhances your sense of coherence. So the dynamic seems to be occurring in both directions.
Thank you very much. And an additional question, do you think this has already proved effect on managers now, the knowledge about WorkSoc and how do you implement it in practice?
I'm sorry, say the first part again. So we think what has impacted managers?
Yes, managers, leaders in companies, in organizations. Do you see already some changes?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. So I would say that they would not be aware of the term of sense of coherence, most likely. Hopefully one day they will be. In the meantime, though, it appears that in very many workplaces, there is a stronger awareness for resourceful working conditions. So moving towards engaging people more strongly rather than just, you know, stopping them from making mistakes or being lazy or things like that. So I think there is more of a focus in that direction. So generally, I would say yes, although that would also probably vary very much between industries. So industries where it's hard to find qualified employees, of course, there is more of an economic incentive also to focus on these types of resourceful working environments.
Thank you very much. This is one thing Bengt Lindström uses to say in his speeches. You cannot go on the streets and ask people, how is your sock today? So we have to find new wordings and new concepts and talk about what we mean. I'm now a little bit uncertain about how to proceed. Because I jumped in to help to moderate. And maybe, Pauline, could you tell me with which questions we should go on? I'm sorry for this.
Oh, yes, so I do. The ones that at this point, we need to hear more from Michael and Claude Helen about related questions, the ones that have been shared in advance.
Please, Claude, Hélène, may I?
Thank you very much. Yes, and I think actually I can connect very well to what Sylvia has just said, because I'm also an industrial psychologist and have been working a lot in this field as well. And over the past 15 years, we could actually see changes within the work environment and within sense of coherence, because it shifted from a strong focus on manageability in the workplaces. And we've mainly looked at engineering contexts and also automotive engineering contexts. And it shifted a lot in managers and leaders from the focus on manageability towards a stronger focus on meaningfulness. And that was quite interesting. And now in the past 2 years, we have started to look into workplaces that are trying to really shift within the South African context from the digitalized work context towards the fourth industrial revolution, bringing in smart systems and all of that. And a lot of people within the South African workplaces find it very disruptive. And we can see a lot of increase in stress levels and also anxieties and an insecurity of how to deal with technology coming into the workplaces and taking over, especially now during COVID. We could see it as well, the struggle with the remote workplaces, for example, especially because we are sitting in a context where, you know, technology does not work because we often do not have electricity. So we looked at that, and at the moment we are trying to find out how is actually the SOC affected by the increase in technology on the human relationships and on the context we are in. I don't have any answers yet, but I think this would really be an interesting aspect if we have to look at the sense of coherence within the new workplaces and within maybe workplaces where we don't have such a close face-to-face connection anymore or for some time, how SOC is affected and how it can change. And this is really one of my questions. Do we then really look to or have to look deeper into agency, because we can see the control levels are going higher in organizations, but shouldn't it actually be agency that everybody can take on by themselves without having a controlling
manager or leader, for example. And these are questions that I find really interesting without answers yet, but I would really like to discuss them with you as well. Thank you.
Do you want me to go next? Okay. I'm adding probably a slightly different direction because the work I'm doing has a political dimension. Like the basic question that I'm asking myself is when a society is so well adapted to conflict, can you move towards peace? And I was really happy when Shona introduced us to the idea that coping is just coping. It's not positive, it's not negative. it's just coping. And in Israel, we're living in a very weird reality because we are coping with the ongoing experience of violence, which doesn't make sense. Does it make sense to be in an ever-present danger for your life, for your health? Were you ready to kill or be killed? It doesn't make sense, but our sense of coherence manages it very well because it's informed by narratives which create a map, which tells us why is happening, what is happening, who are the good ones, who are the bad ones, and what is our role in it. So it's very comprehensive. There is value in being recruited to this joint struggle. You find meaning in it. You're part of a joint project. And there's also a sense we can manage. We are strong as a collective. So there's an interplay probably between sense of personal coherence and sense of national coherence. And I think what really interests me for quite a while is, can it be changed? Can I create my own sense of coherence without relying on what the majority of those around me think, feel, do, perceive? And I think this is a very distinct challenge, to have a sense of coherence as a minority voice, as somebody whose legitimacy of position is being doubted. And I think I have some indications what it could look like. I think there are some who do it, and this is part of the studies that we've been doing in Shifra's team at the Martin Springer Center for Conflict Studies, and it might have some elements which I wonder if they resonate with others' work as well. It's like accepting that there's little we really know. When you live in a very chaotic environment, like during the COVID crisis, but so is also conflict reality, is like accepting that I don't know things, being ready to accept it. It's not striving for a very comprehensive cognitive map, but accepting that this map, some of it I know and most of it I don't know, and this is how I have to deal with reality. It's finding meaning in being somebody who's not broadly accepted by others, and turning it into a value, finding it of significance, feeling a pioneer, feeling somebody who has significance for himself, herself, and finding value in it. And also accepting that maybe I can't change the reality I experience, but I don't need to accept reality. I can try and live not in accordance to the reality that I experience. It's like making the little changes that I myself can do. I wonder if this is something which may grow. I think we see it. I think we see very interesting ways of coping with being beyond what is accepted as a way of relating to reality, understanding reality, finding your role in reality. And this, at least for me, adds some hope that maybe also in a reality which seems unchangeable, some people refuse to adapt to it, cope with it in the accepted manner, and find different ways of coping with it.
Thank you very much, Michael, and for introducing another difficult period when SOC is not naturally improved or strengthened in times of war and in times of COVID. And thank you also for getting back to this term of coping. I think this is an important point we got here in our discussion. In the meantime, there was a new question coming in, and it's a question to all of you. What is your estimation? What time of training or influence is needed to measure changes in SOC? So how much exposure to what, how long exposure to what is necessary to influence the sense of coherence? The mics are open, just open your mic and give your opinion, please, all of you.
I can start. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Okay. There are often people who ask, well, sense of coherence is stable. It can't change. And I don't think this is a good starting point. Of course, sense of coherence can change. And sense of coherence can develop from being a person who's dying, who's born, who's old, whatever. You always have a position where you can move, but do not expect very fast changes, because you are actually dealing with the perspective of lifelong perspective, and the basis for this is not moving very quickly unless you face some very dramatic and difficult situation. There you can see the change, or some very strong, like becoming a mother, giving birth to a child, can be also a position where you can move. But basically, it's a very stable, and this has been criticized by many researchers. Why is it any use to use it when it's so stable? That would be my point at this time.
I have another point I could add to this discussion, and that aligns with what Bengt just said, but also shows a different angle. So we measured work-related and also general sense of coherence in our study that we conducted. And what we found was that resources do contribute to work-related sense of coherence. Now, the work-related sense of coherence did not specifically ask about resources. It just asked about the three dimensions of comprehensibility, manageability, and meaningfulness in the workplace. And while this was not an intervention over a 3-month time interval, we could actually see a pretty substantial impact of work resources onto work SOC. So a point that I would like to suggest is that if we don't see changes in the overall SOC, maybe it is already happening, but because overall SOC is influenced by so many different life domains, if we measure something more closely in the domain in which that intervention is occurring, then maybe we can actually already track that in that domain. It only takes longer or more impact until it actually translates into overall SOC.
More contributions from the others, and also for the audience. The question board is not only for questions, but also for your remarks and ideas. So just bring yourself and your ideas in the discussion.
I would like to add something, and I want to add something which is more intuitive than based on on studies yet. I would like to relate to SOC, to SOC, as a dynamic phenomenon, meaning on a given day, maybe I'm challenged beyond my present capacity of containing it. And I may have good days and bad days. And I guess it's about the elasticity, my capacity to regain my sense of coherence. And I wonder if there's something that we can do there in terms of how can we support the elasticity of regaining sense of coherence following difficult life experiences in the course of difficult life experiences? Thank you.
This is a very important question. I would like to give on to Marie, to Claude Hélène. I don't know if her connection is still good. Also good. She might come back. Or also at the others. Claude Hélène, Michael just mentioned that, or brought up the question or the point that it's important to know more or to focus more the ability to restore the sense of coherence after very dramatic or very difficult experiences. And I'm not surprised this question comes from Israel, and I think South Africa has a lot to say to this as well. So Claude Hélène, please, be your opinion.
Thanks very much. Yes, sorry, I couldn't hear you. That is why my face was gone, but thanks for repeating it. I believe we have to look at these kind of aspects where we can restore a sense of coherence after traumatic events, for example, and how we can do it and in what kind of time we can do it. I believe on the one hand, we need sometimes very fast interventions where we can actually act quite quickly. And at the same time, we need a kind of sensitivity and a long-term rebuilding of maybe a sense of coherence at the same time. And I've been holding a presentation today of on transcultural identity management, where I showed that a young boy who went into the German context often, you know, was thrown back in his development and in his personal growth. But always when he returned to South Africa, he recovered by himself very, very quickly. And for me, it was very impressive what kind of influence the context has and how self-healing this little boy actually was, you know, and I really wished for that adults could be the same still. And this would be a question for me in the context of Michael as well. Do we have to make differences when we look at childhood, at adolescence, and at adults? And if yes, how? And how much self-healing is maybe also coming into play here? Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. There was a remark from the audience that maybe the sense of coherence as well as the sense for coherence might be rather a process than an orientation. Well, this would be another big topic to discuss, but maybe the question of exposure, length of exposure to context will partly be answered by the next handbook on Salutogenesis, where Eva Langeland and her colleagues have made a comprehensive literature analysis on what kind of interventions do change SOC and how long is this change. So this might be very interesting in the forthcoming second handbook on Salutogenesis. We will soon have to close, but I would like to give to everybody again a question and the voice, starting with Bengt. What do you think does your concept, well, this is a question then for all concepts, to all the people on the panel, all the colleagues on the panel, what does the sense for coherence contribute to the development of the concept of SOC in general? What do you think?
You are talking about sense for coherence now. Of course, if you think about the concept that we developed, it is a concept that can be based on how you perceive and carry the word. And in that sense, it could be a concept. Now, we have not used it enough, and we have not sort of actually made a really clear framework. Thinking about sense of coherence has been living with us since the late 70s, and sense for coherence has a very, very short history. But definitely after the session we had this afternoon, I feel it's worthwhile to continue and really get into the depth of it. And I think it is It is a concept that can develop health and can develop, as I would say, life.
I would like to invite all of you, maybe not calling you by name, everyone, so just come in, please. What is your concept, the one you worked on today and you work on in your research, contribute to the further development of the concept of sense of coherence?
Maybe I can start. So I think with the sense of coherence revised or SOCOR, generally there's still a lot to be done, I think, to advance the concept. And there's still a lot of work, like validation work with different samples, different populations. There's still a lot to be done there. But I think overall, I mean, in terms of my work on stress or adversity, I think that there's a lot we can do going forward. I mean, particularly as the times change and these times, I mean, we've literally just had a global pandemic where, of course, that is this, a major stress, but there's been so many other aspects of stress and adversity that have gone along with it. And I think in terms of stress and adversity research, I think it can be very easily sidetracked towards the more negative or pathogenic focus in times like these with COVID. So I think it's really, really important that we don't lose focus of this salutogenic framework, and that it may be even more important than ever, particularly in relation to stress and health research, that we push the agenda for a sense of coherence and the conceptualization in, let's say, modern times, or what's the terrible phrase we've just heard for the last year and a half, the new normal.
Thank you very much.
This is maybe an important focus.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael, maybe.
Unmute, I managed. we are going into the direction, the team I'm working within, we are going in the direction of trying to develop sense of professional coherence in the context of the health professions, and looking if health professionals might be guided by universal values, which might contribute to openness towards the other, which is the taboo where I live, to be open towards others, and in another few places as well with whom we'll be working. And I think it's a very interesting interplay. Something which I keep thinking about is also that the sense of personal coherence, sense of professional coherence, sense of national coherence, how did they influence each other? And of course, mostly I'm interested in the issues of values. Like, it's for me, it's not about having a strong sense of coherence. It's, can we have a strong sense of coherence which is attuned to humanistic values?
Thank you. You are in line with what Lenneke just posed, that she said it's important to also look at a specific sense of coherences, not only at the general one. So this leads me to Sylvia, who has a very specific sense of coherence.
Thank you, Claudia. Yeah, this is the perfect handover. I was just thinking the same thing also with Michael's mention of different domain-specific senses of coherence. I cannot really speak personally to the sense for coherence. That is a framework I haven't dived into too deeply yet. But in terms of sense of coherence, my takeaway of what WorkSoc can contribute to that is the insight that we can look at a facet of sense of coherence in a domain-specific way, and that also allows us to learn more and maybe understand over time how these different domain-specific senses of coherence contribute to the larger sense of coherence picture.
Thank you very much. Would you, Helen, like to add something?
Yeah, just to add maybe, because I've been mainly looking at the general sense of coherence, but always in relationship to certain, you know, contexts, I believe that needs further research as well, besides the specific domains, and also looking at constructs like value constructs, like, for example, compassion or other aspects that can come in from the context. I believe that is really important in the future as well.
Thank you very much. And you give me a perfect handover to the to the forthcoming closure of this panel. And I would like to ask all our panelists to communicate their giveaway messages. Sylvia, you're teaching and you're very well prepared. You always give them takeaway messages to the students. So I would like to ask you to start with this.
I'm still working on that. Normally when I teach with your students, I have a little bit of a heads up to prepare something. I'm still working on that. I found Claude Delaine because we're from the same field, of course, in that regard. I also found that really insightful, like the composition of the changing work of world of work and how that translates into different pronunciations within the SOC construct. So that was really interesting to me and new insight.
Last remark from Claude Delaine.
Yeah, I would also just like to say that I believe we have to take the context even more into consideration. And I really want to thank Michael for the idea to really looking at the restoration or the reconstruction of SOC and the healing process. That is really something I would really be interested in. Thanks very much.
So maybe Michael, you would like to go on?
Yes, I think we had fantastic questions today in this meeting. They're very exciting. I think this, for me, the major takeaway. There's so much to discover, especially on this interplay between the personal and the context and recovery. And why does it need to be stable, SOC? Lovely questions. Very exciting.
Who would like to continue? Shana?
I also want to say thank you to people who asked questions, but also my other panel members, because it's been really, really interesting to hear also in terms of in war-related experiences or work-related sense of coherence. And I think that I feel like we're fighting the good fight and that it's important to network we all have different focuses, but I think it's really, really nice to have such a platform to come together and learn a bit from each other. So I think keep networking is the way forward.
Bengt, may I ask you for your final closure remarks?
Well, I'm not going to dwell on technological problems. I'm going to say thank you very much to the panel, everybody. Some of you I've only read about before, and now I actually met you. Claude, Hélène especially, have been in a person I never seen in reality. And now I see you are there, at least on the internet. And especially to Pauline and Claudia, who was able to take over and master this situation. You must have a very strong sense of coherence and flexible. Thank you.
Thank you to all of you on the panel. And I would like to maybe shortly summarize that we have talked about sense of coherence in difficult situations, about the restorage of sense of coherence. And I think this is very important that we do open our minds to other contexts than the Western European, to contexts of war, to contexts of crisis, to contexts of poverty, and to also to people who do not have access to resources, like people who have suffered from trauma, or elderly people, or those of them, as Shuna also showed us. I also very happy that you talk about coping and coping not as positive and negative. I think this is something I would like to emphasize. We should be very careful with these words. Antonovsky's big revolution was that he observed, he didn't value, he did want to see how things work, and this is what inspires us up to now. And I think it's dangerous if we start to value with positive or negative concepts, because then we destroy the openness of empirical curiosity, Antonovsky taught us, and also the research on salutogenesis adapted for many years. But I would like to end with an anecdote. And the anecdote is my short and only encounter with Aaron Antonovsky. I was a young student and he was lecturing, and I was enthusiastic, and I went and asked him, "Professor, where can I learn what you teach here?" And he said, "There's nothing to learn about. Take the model and develop it further." And I think this is what you did, and this is what we try to do. And it's important that we remain in contact to discuss, to integrate the knowledge in a community of friends and colleagues, and also contrahends in a positive sense in salutogenic research. Thank you very much. Over to Oliver.
Thank you very much, Gloria. Thank you very much to all the panelists. It's been a very interesting and an original format as well at the beginning, like what moves you and what interests you. I really like that format about knowing you a little bit more personally, because it's emotions what really move us and puts us into from one place to another. Thank you very much for sharing your knowledge, your experience, and all these discussions. Now we're going to the winding down session. So thank you very much, Sylvia, Claude, Shauna, Michael, Ben, Pauline, Claudia and Michael. I'm repeating too, but we are all there. And now we're going to the winding down session. This is about reflecting the day, but I'm not gonna be doing this. So I'm gonna pass it now to Lenneke van Drager and Georg Bauer, who are gonna be in charge of this groups, small groups in fours that are going to be to reflect about what happened during this full day, which has been with many things going on. And I think we have to, like good wines, like put sedimentar, we say here, poner el pozo, that it goes down so we can really actualize. I think many more days after the conference, we will still be thinking and going on and reflecting on many things that have been going. This is the first day. Tomorrow more, but first the winding sessions. Lenneke and Georg, the floor is yours.